Next parsha is Parshas Noach, second parsha in the Torah. Parshas Noach is the story of the flood. It starts with Hashem telling Noach to build a teva, to build an ark. It talks about bringing the animals into the ark, the kosher, the non-kosher, staying in the ark for a year. The Torah tells us it was 40 days, 40 nights of rain, but they actually had to stay in the ark for an entire solar year. Rashi tells us to atone for the entire year of doing bad things in the past. And until the water receded, they weren't able to leave the ark for a long time. So they stayed for one entire year. When they finally left the ark, the Torah tells us that Noah planted, and he planted a vineyard, and he drank, eventually the grapes grew, and the grapes became, he made it into wine, and he became drunk. And the whole story of how one of his children disrespected him at that point, and he cursed this child Ham. And the Torah concludes the parsha with the story of how Abraham is born and how Abraham is becomes a monotheistic person and actually fights against the prevalent at the time idol worshiping, and he is because of that thrown into a fiery furnace. That's not clearly in the Chumash, but mentioned, the Medrash takes it out from the mentioning of the Ur Kasdim, the fact that the place he was called Ur, the fire of the Chaldeans of the Kasdim. Rashi explains that to us. And so that's a story. The parsha starts with Noah, starts with the destruction of the world, concludes at the very end with Abraham. So let's talk mostly about Noah, because Noah is, after all, the name of the parsha. Now, Noah is not, this parsha is not the first place where Noah appears. Noah is actually introduced to us in last week's parsha. The end of Parshas Bereishis, the end of the first parsha in the Torah, when the Torah lists the 10 generations from Abraham, I'm sorry, from Adam to Noah, Noah is listed there in last week's parsha. And the Torah actually tells us in last week's parsha why he's called Noah. What does the word Noah come from? And the Torah says that his father called him Noah because he was an individual who helped bring peace to the world. And peace to the world means that he was, Rashi tells us, he invented the concept of farming. He showed farming techniques. Either he taught the people how to farm properly, whereas until that time they didn't know how to farm, or he invented a plow. So says the Midrash of Gemara, and with the plow you're able to break up the land, and that's how you become a farmer. That's how you're able to plant stuff. So in last week's parsha, we're introduced to Noah, and we're told why he's called Noah, because he was a person who was able to break up the ground and able to and taught how to plow. So keep that in mind for a second. In this week's parsha, the parsha opens up and the Torah says, these are the children of Noah. Noah was a tzaddik. Noah ish tzaddik. Noah was a tzaddik. And he followed Hashem's plans and he was loyal to Hashem. And then the Torah, only after mentioning that Noah was a tzaddik, and that he followed Hashem's plans, and he was loyal to Hashem, then the Torah says, and Hashem told Noah to build an ark. Now, the immediate thing that we need to ask ourselves is, why is it that the Torah feels the need to explain to us the origin behind Noah's name? Many people were called many different things, and the Torah doesn't explain each name. Some names are explained. For example, Abraham's name is explained, why his name was changed. Sarah, Yaakov becomes Israel. Some names are explained later on, the 12 tribes, the names are explained, most of them. But why is Noah's name from all the generations explained? So that's a question. And the second question is, why is it that when the Torah introduces Noah, he's called Ish Tzaddik, a man who is a tzaddik? clearly, if Hashem is choosing to save him, there's something righteous about him. And why specifically if he is a person who is following Hashem's paths, do we have to say he's a tzaddik? It would be enough to say, Noach, listen to Hashem. That's what it says. It says, Et ha'olokim et ha'olok Noach. Noach, listen to Hashem. Why is it necessary to call him a tzaddik? So Rashi, who teaches us the literal meaning of the Torah, Rashi tells us it's not really important for the story itself. It's just that we want to compliment Noach. Once we mention Noach's name, you mention a tzaddik's name, you say, oh, he's a tzaddik, he should be blessed. But there's a deeper level to all of this. And the deeper level is, it goes back to the story of why did Hashem create humanity in the first place? And what is the mission of humans? What is the human mission in the world? Why? How are we different than animals? Because after all, you understand that the stories in the Torah, especially in the first few parshas of the Torah, are not just history stories. They're not just interesting stories. They're instructional stories. Torah means instruction. So if the Torah is giving us a story and giving us details of the story itself is an instruction, and the details of the story are important details to be able to understand and to be able to realize what the instruction is all about. So Hashem tells us that humanity is created at the very end of creation, at the last week's parsha, and Adam is given a mission. And the mission is to become the conductor, the harmonizer, the individual who is causing all the levels of creation to come together to serve Hashem. In order to do that, first and foremost, we need to serve Hashem, but then we become the harmonizing agents that are using the various other levels. And we talk about four levels in creation. There's the mineral world, which is rocks and mountains and water and things that don't grow, don't move. There is the vegetable kingdom, things that have life in the sense that they are growing, but they don't move from place to place. They stay rooted to the ground. Then there are the animal world, and then there's the humans. The human job, the job of the humans is not only to all of us get together in worshiping Hashem, that's first and foremost our job, but our job is also to be able to enable the animals, the vegetable, and the mineral worlds to worship the Creator. In other words, we are all supposed to be a part of this great big chorus, this great big choir that is giving praise to our Creator. That's the job. That's all, and all the mitzvahs that we do in the life that we lead, in the language of King David in Tehillim, it says, he says, "Bechol derachecha de'eyu, know God in all your ways." In all your ways, meaning we go to sleep, we wake up in the morning, everything we do, go on vacation, eat, drink, it doesn't matter for sure when we're davening, for learning Torah, doing the mitzvah. But in everything that we do, we're supposed to be using our efforts and energies and proclaiming Hashem's power, Hashem's oneness, because Hashem is giving us energy every moment of the day. If there would be parts of the day when we're coasting, we're on autopilot, so maybe those parts of the day we wouldn't be focused on reflecting on the greatness of our Creator. But since Hashem is giving us energy proactively every single moment of the day, we are need to take every moment, regardless of what we're doing at the moment, whether it's a supposedly secular or a supposedly sacred act, and we need to use them all to serve Hashem. And in fact, that's one of the major teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movements, that in fact there is no such thing as an act that is not able to be imbued with holiness, not able to be imbued with spirituality. Even the most simplest of acts, if you do it for the right reasons, becomes a holy act. And this is what the Torah teaches us. This is not the Baal Shem Tov's innovation. Baal Shem Tov is highlighting the Torah's teaching. So therefore, Adam, the first man, was supposed to be the primary example and also the individual who leads the further generations of humans by his example. But unfortunately, he ate from the tree of knowledge and he's messed up right from the very beginning. This is our grandfather we're talking about. So, you know, we're all messed up in that sense. And Hashem took a look and he said, the Torah tells us immediately the third generation of humans already started worshiping idols. And this went on until Noah's times. So the Torah tells us, Noach ish tzaddik. Noach was a person who was able to become again that type of individual that is the harmonizer, the choir director, that type of individual who is a tzaddik. What is a tzaddik? A tzaddik is a conduit for Hashem's energy into the world. We believe that the world is hierarchical. That means there's levels and that energy flows from the higher level to the lower levels. The tzaddik is the highest level. In language of the Torah, tzaddik is yisod olam. Tzaddik is the foundation of the world. Noach was that individual that was able to once again open up the channels of spiritual energy, once again become the leader of his living up to his mission as humans, our mission as humans. And that mission is to make Hashem's presence known in the world. That's our mission. Noach was ish tzaddik. He was a man who was able to do that. How was he able to do that? The Torah tells us in the previous parsha, because he plowed. What does it mean to plow? You take a look at a field. You take a look at plowing generally is considered to be the first act in planting. As a matter of fact, when we look at the laws of Shabbos and we look at the creative categories of forbidden labors on Shabbos, we know that there are 39 categories of different creative acts that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So they're pretty much all understandable why they would be creative labors. So there's planting, there's harvesting, there's grinding wheat into flour, and making the flour into dough, and so on. But in the process of, and eventually baking the bread, but in the process of making bread, the Torah actually lists, our meaning in the Mishnah, it actually lists our rabbis, the very first one is plowing. Plowing is the first creative act. So you ask yourself a question, how is plowing a creative act? Plowing is an act of turning over the earth. There's nothing creative. You're not creating anything by plowing. If I understand, planting is creative. I understand harvesting, taking the thing off the tree. You finally have it. But why is plowing creative? And the answer is because in order to plant, you cannot plant unless you first plow. That means you have to clear away the rocks. You have to open up the earth. You have to maybe take what was previously planted there and left. And sometimes the farmer leaves what plows into the ground, the previous growth that's been cut down, and that provides minerals. So plowing is a preparation for the planting that comes after that. But it is also an act of opening up, clearing away the brush, clearing away the rocks, clearing away the negativity. That was Noach's job. Noach excelled in a time of confusion, a time of idol worship, a time of rape and robbery and pillaging and all kinds of stuff. Noach was like, you know, they say there's an icebreaker ship that goes in the cold waters and breaks through the ice so that the ships after him can come. That was Noach's job. Noach was the individual who was able to cut through all of the stuff. Now, in that case, Rashi actually brings us to our attention. Was Noach as great as Abraham? Or maybe Noach was greater than Abraham? Or maybe Abraham, who was, in other words, we always associate these concepts with Abraham. Was Noach the first or was Abraham the first? So we zoom to the end of the parsha. And we find out that when Noah went to plant, to actually plant, he made a left turn. He planted the wrong thing first. Instead of planting wheat to have bread, he planted grapes to have wine. Both necessary. But wheat to have bread is a staple of life, which is the first and the primary thing you have to do. Grapes to have wine is a wonderful and an important and a necessary part of a person's life and a diet and a celebration and so on. But it's not the staple. You can't live on wine. You can live on bread itself. But you can't live on wine itself. You get drunk on wine itself. It was only Abraham, who we're going to talk about in next week's parsha, was able to plant. And when Abraham planted, the Torah also calls Abraham a planter. But Abraham planted, and the Torah says, and we're going to talk about this, Abraham planted an eshel, which is, Rashi says, well, what's an eshel? We're not 100% sure what the word eshel means. Is it a type of tree? Or maybe it's not a type of tree at all, but it's a tent. So he pitched his tent and he created not just something for himself personally, but he created a hotel to be able to give people who are passersby in the desert, food and shelter. So that was Abraham's planting. So the Torah, but let's not focus right now on Abraham, because we're going to talk about the advantage. I just want to bring to you the advantage of Abraham over Noah, which becomes clear from the progression of the story. But at this time, we're talking about Noah's qualities, you know. And Noah's qualities, the Torah tells us, was that he was able to reestablish the channels of communication between human and God. Everybody else turned their back on Hashem. Noah was able to plow through the rocks, the stubble, the undergrowth, the brush, and he was able to open up those channels again. The Torah tells us that Noah was personally responsible for the animals in the ark, in the Teva. And he also recognized, Noah, that when he left the ark, he recognized that the first thing you should do is to offer up a korban, a sacrifice, an offering to Hashem. And the offering that he gave was only from the kosher animals. So Noah is our grandfather too. Noah is the father of all humanity. Just like Adam is the father of all humanity. Noah is the father of all humanity. What Noah also did was that Noah once again established the connection between the human act and the human capacity to receive spiritual reward for that act. In Pirkei Avos, we read, chapter 5 of Pirkei Avos, in the beginning, third Mishnah, we read that there were 10 generations from Adam until Noah, and they were all wicked until Noah. And then there were 10 generations from Noah until Abraham. Those further generations were also wicked until Abraham. But Abraham, because he was righteous, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, I think the fathers, Abraham was able to get the reward, the merit that all of those previous 10 generations had accrued in some way by doing whatever positive they did, but they didn't deserve to get that merit. So the Mishnah says that there was no merit between, there was no accruing of reward from or no capacity for Noah to accrue the reward from Adam until Noah. So that means the Mishnah is very interesting. It says from Adam to Noah, 10 generations, doesn't talk about Noah getting the merit, even though they were all wicked. From Noah to Abraham, 10 generations, then the Mishnah says Abraham got them. So what happened to the merit of the previous first 10 generations? The answer is Hashem took that capacity and put it on ice, so to speak, hid it away. And humans were not, in other words, we're in a fight. Humanity and God, we were sort of in a fight until Hashem said, enough, I want a divorce. I don't want to have anything to do. So humanity was fighting against Hashem for 10 generations. And Noah, by virtue of the fact that he was not following the example of his generation, he went against his generation. He once again established that connection between the spiritual and the material, between God and humans, and once again opened up those channels. But this week's parsha, really, just to sum up, and which talks about the qualities and the greatness of Noah. This week's parsha teaches us that in a time of great, great difficulty, in a time of a lot of different negativity, one person not following that path can save the world. One person not following the negativity can turn over the whole thing. And in fact, not only save the world, but create brand new channels of blessing, brand new channels of spiritual energy. And just to conclude with one last thing, Baal Shem Tov teaches that when Hashem tells Noah, come into the Teva, come into the ark here is not just the ark, a physical ark, a box made out of wood, a ship. The ark is the words of Torah. So in Hebrew, the word, a word is a teva. Why is a word a teva? The word teva means a box in Hebrew. So in our parsha, it refers to the ark, which was like a box. But in ordinary Hebrew, in language, in speaking Hebrew, not so much in modern Hebrew. Modern Hebrew would say milah is a word. But teva is a little more archaic, but it means the same thing. It means a word. And the reason is because every word contains a thought. How do we express our thoughts? By putting them into little boxes that we call words. So a word is a box containing a thought. A number of words in the sentence is in a larger box containing a larger thought. And what happens is that Baal Shem Tov tells us, when Hashem tells Noach, Bo el hateva, come into the ark, and you'll be protected from the waters of the flood. What Hashem is telling is each and every Jew, and this is the message from this week's Parsha Noach, each and every person, if we come into the word, meaning we put ourselves inside the box containing Hashem's words, not that we create boxes and we try to then make our box figure out why our situation, why our box, the box that we're in, is good or bad. To begin with, don't think so much about yourself and about where you are. Think about Hashem's thing, and then all of a sudden you'll be able to realize that you're going into the word. You're going, your life then becomes encapsulated, encompassed by Hashem's words. And in fact, this is, the Baal Shem Tov teaches, the way to protect yourself from the Meha Mabul, the waters of the Mabul. Mabul is the flood. And the flood is all of the concerns, all of the worries, all of the troubles that we feel we are being inundated with. We protect ourselves with the words of Torah. So this is the message. The message is that there is a protection from all our troubles, and that's the Torah. If we enter into the words of Torah and we allow the Torah to encapsulate and encompass us, to surround us, then we are protected from those troubles. And if we find that it's difficult because nobody else is doing it, or because, you know, maybe it's just hard in general to do something that we're not accustomed to do, the answer is Noah himself found it difficult. And Hashem sort of had to push him into the ark, the Torah tells us. And he only went in because he saw the waters of the flood rising and rising. So he went into the ark, and eventually Hashem had to close the door for him, because sometimes we find it difficult. So ultimately the lesson is, take the first step and Hashem will do the rest. You find it difficult to do the next step and the next step, you're in the same boat as everybody else. You don't have to do the whole job yourself. Hashem says in the language of the Midrash, open for me like the eye of a needle. Just open a little crack for me, let me in a little bit, and then I'll open the doors wide for you like the doors of the Beit HaMikdash that were 20 cubits wide. So this is the empowering message of this week's Parsha, that one person can save the world, that one person becomes an individual that once again establishes the connection and the relationship for everybody else too. So if you do good, not only are you saving yourself, you're saving an entire world along with you. In Noah's case, he didn't save the people of his generation, besides his children and his family, but he did save the rest of humanity. All of us are children of Noah, the downlines. And also at the same time, he didn't have to do the job by himself. He initially did building of the ark himself, but actually going into the ark, he was pushed in by Hashem, closing the door from the rainwater. Hashem closed the door. It's very interestingly, it says that in this week's Parsha, that Hashem closed the door for him. Rashi makes the comment on the literal level, the reason Hashem had to involve himself in closing the door for Noah, Noah couldn't close the door himself, is because they were troublemakers holding the door open, and they didn't let Noah. Fine, that's on the literal level. But on a deeper level, it simply means that if you start the job, Hashem will finish the job and close the troubles off for us. And in fact, that's what we daven every single day. Hashem, please, we are limited in our capacity, and you should finish the job for us. And of course, it is all leads up to the coming of Mashiach, which of course we're waiting, hoping for, and we believe that Hashem, therefore, is waiting for us just to do a little bit more, and then he will complete and close that job too, and close us all up. So this is...
Actually, you know, when the flood stopped, instead of exiting the ark, Noah asked Hashem, do I have your permission to leave the ark?
Yeah.
And there is a lot of commentary saying that there is one sage one rabbi who said, if I was the one in the ark, I would have broken the door down and leapt to, you know, start a new world. So kind of whenever we have an opportunity to build something new, and whenever we have an opportunity to, you know, set an example and restart something, we should never ask for Hashem permission. We always have Hashem permission to do that. So this is a lesson we need to learn. So
whenever... Don't wait for someone to give you the golden key. Take advantage.
Permission to do something good. Yep. If you are going to do something good and something that you were meant to do, do not wait for Hashem's permission to do it. Or for Hashem's blessing to do it, you might as well just do it.
This is, by the way, another in line with other teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, that when we see something that is in front of us and is able to be done, the reason we're seeing it is because it's our job to do it. If it wouldn't be our job, we wouldn't see it in the first place. It wouldn't come to our attention. So if it comes to your attention, it means it is our job, because we believe in what we call Hashkacha Pratis, the individual and specific divine providence. We see it, it's our job to do. So that's
a great lesson. I wanted just to find out about the rainbow and your interpretation of the rainbow.
The Torah tells us the rainbow, and there's different comments whether or not the rainbow was created at that time or it was created with the beginning creation, but it was then set up as a sign. So, no, there's very beautiful comments about the refraction of light. Because a rainbow happens when light is refracted. It's reflected back and the light rays are bent. So that's an interesting question, whether or not this, that's an initial threshold question. This ability for light to be refracted, to be bent, the light rays to be bent. And when light rays are bent, then the spectrum is separated out. So you see the rainbow. When light is going straight, they're all going the same direction. So you don't see the different colors. When the light is bent, then you begin to see different colors. Is this something that was created at the time, or is this something that was created initially? And there's different opinions. You know, it could be that Hashem created this capacity in light at that time. And until that time, light was not able to be refracted. But the deeper lesson in the whole thing is that light is Hashem, is a mashal, it's a parable for Hashem's energy coming to us. And the question is, was this spiritual energy, the energy that Hashem gives to us, we are, when it's refracted, it means it's affected by the spiritual world, by the physical world. Is Hashem's energy in fact refracted, therefore bent and changed by the material world, or does it pass right through the material world or not? And the answer is, when Hashem gave us the flood and showed us that we have the ability. So what is at the end of the day? The Torah tells us that the rainbow is something that is shown to us when we deserve to be punished. But since Hashem promised never again to punish humanity and the world in that way, on a totality level, individual pockets, yes, but not on a totality level to be punished all at the same time, Hashem will show us a rainbow. And the Gemara tells us, in fact, that some of the great sages, or Shmuel Bar Yochai, for example, in his lifetime, there was no rainbows. How could this be? There was no rainbows. In other words, how could this be? If the quality of light is after there is a sort of a rain of, you know, a different kind of rain, and the clouds are the right way, and now the light is passing through. So this is a natural phenomenon. Why would it make a difference if there's a tzaddik? And again, this is the idea. The idea is the light completely absorbed back into the world, or does it get pushed back and bounced back? And that's an interesting thing. What's better, what's worse? So when the world is in sync with Hashem, Hashem's energy permeates us. It's like saying you're eating food that becomes absorbed in your body, or you're eating food that's expelled by your body, which means the food is not good for you, or your body is sick. There's a problem, there's a disconnect. The great tzaddikim, and this leads me back to what I was saying earlier about Noah, the great tzaddikim, they lived their lives and they affected their surroundings in such a way that spiritual and material were not fighting with each other. There was a synthesis, there was a togetherness, there was a unity between the spiritual and the physical. There wasn't a tension. In our lives, we have a tension. What does a tension mean? A person goes to daven, and all of a sudden, they have thoughts in their head about their work. A person goes to do a mitzvah to give tzedakah, and all of a sudden, you say, I don't want to give the money away. It's my money, this and that. A person goes to do a favor for somebody, and or says something in the middle, you say something wrong, you do something, an insult, whatever. There's a tension, or just on a very simple level. I'd rather go to sleep than go get up early in the morning and go to daven. I'd rather do this than keep this and do whatever. There's a tension. So there's a struggle, in other words, between the physical and the spiritual worlds. Tzaddikim don't have that struggle. In the language of the Alter Rebbe, tzaddikim don't have the Yetzirah. They don't have this struggle. So by the tzaddikim, there is a complete togetherness, harmony, unity. There is no rainbow, meaning there is no bouncing back of the light. There is no refraction of light. Rainbow means, again, refraction, bouncing back, not absorbing light, not allowing the light to go straight through, but it's bent. It takes a left turn. Not good. Therefore, the Torah tells us that when we are doing Averis, and Hashem has sinned, and Hashem wants to show us, guys, you're pushing me away. You are creating tension. You're making a fight between us. Why should we fight? Let's get together. Let's be unified, Hashem says to us. Hashem shows us a rainbow, and the rainbow is a sign again of light not passing straight through an object, but being pushed back, being bounced back, being thrown off an object. And that's a sign to us. Now, again, whether it was created at that time or it's simply something Hashem shows us at that time, a matter of discussion, dispute, but that's the concept, that's the idea. So in Judaism, we do not view a rainbow as a positive thing. It's interesting that, in common talk, a rainbow is a beautiful thing. It's, oh, I saw a rainbow, so wonderful. And the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.